Welcome to Does the Team Think with Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Leslie Crowther, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards.
Hey, what is the old-time great?
And team, listen very carefully, because here comes a question put to you by Mrs. Beryl Fiddler. Mrs. Fiddler, welcome to the program. What sort of question have you got for us today?
When seeing a new moon, does the team think it's a good idea to turn their money over and wish, or have they any other superstitious habits?
When seeing a new moon, does the team think it's a good idea to turn their money over and wish, or have they any other superstitious habits? Leslie Crowther.
Well, I wish you hadn't asked me first.
Why?
It's bad luck.
Oh. Arthur Askey.
Actually,
that's very good, Leslie.
I just turn the money over to the wife and pray. That's what I do.
I just turn the wife over and say 50p.
She pays you these days.
What do the other 49 do?
I don't know where they are.
Arthur Askey.
Well, I think I am a bit superstitious. I was walking along the road with a friend of mine the other day, and there was a ladder. And he's superstitious, you see. At least I am. I wouldn't go under the ladder, but he did. And you know, he had a pot of paint fell all over him. I didn't see it happen because I walked in the gutter and I was knocked over by a bus.
Ted Ray.
Well, I don't know, superstitions. I gave them up years ago. I used to think the number 13 was superstitious until I went to bed one night and I had a dream about a race. It was the Arc de Triomphe or some big French, I don't know what they call that. I'm not a betting man, but I'm better than this lot. And I dreamt about number 13, you see. So the following morning, I looked in the paper and I picked up number 13, and the jockey's name had 13 letters. So I put £13 on it. Came in 13.
Jimmy Edwards.
I haven't given this question a lot of thought.
I haven't given anything a lot of thought.
Well, I've been miles away from everything in the last few minutes. But there are some superstitions about which I am a little mystified. For example, there's a lot of them attached to our profession, which somebody or you may not realise is the theatre.
I've got a superstition that I always enter. My first entrance in a show is always from the left hand, the prompt side. Always enter from the prompt side. And only once in my career, in my long and distinguished career...
I agree.
Rounds of applause. I came on the right side, and it was because the turn in front of me got the bird. They booed him and they hissed him, and they said, come on, Arthur, you better get on. So I went on from the right-hand side, and I was doing all right for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden, the audience remembered this fella and started booing and hissing all over again. True. So I never enter from... I always dress on the... enter on the left.
Mrs. Fiddler, you've heard a certain amount about theatrical superstitions. What's your view about superstitions?
Well, I've just a little story I thought they might like to hear.
As long as Jim likes it, let's have it.
Well, it was about the old Buck Rabbit who came from the rabbit warren, and he looked in the sky and he saw a new moon, so he rushed back down again and turned his dough over.
Oh, dear. Filthy, get off, hurry. That is the most disgusting job. I have ever.
And that coming from an old Rodine girl, I'm surprised at you. I knew a fellow who had a rabbit's foot, and it's funny because his other foot was quite normal.
In the clause in his contract.
I'll tell you a superstition I had, but I've now dispensed with.
What's that?
In my early days, in my Masonic days, where I used to dash from one Masonic to another, you know, getting a couple of guineas, I always said, don't pay me now, wait till I've done my turn. It's unlucky to be paid before you've done your turn.
Dicing with death, wasn't
it? That's right, dicing with death. I went to do a British Legion or something concert in Camberley. I remember it very well. And the fellow offered me the fee, and I said, oh, no, thank you. No, it's unlucky. No, pay me when I come off. When I came off, he wasn't there. I'd lost 30
what
bob.
What you mean
you
is he'd seen the act.
Thank you very much, Demon. Thank you, Mrs. Fiddler.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Well, fairly good.
Yeah, it was good.
All right, team, Mr. Terence Willett sits on my right, and Mr. Terence Willett puts this question to you. Mr. Willett, please.
What music does the team think most suitable to be played at a wedding?
What music does the team think most suitable to be played at a wedding?
La, da, da, da. But I don't know, when I was a kid, they always used to play Fight the Good Fight.
I thought Rescue the Perishing.
Well done. Well, I went to Jim's wedding and the organist played 1812 with Canon Effects. And a very nice fellow was Canon Effects. He did the
he preached the sermon.
That's right,
that's
right.
He's been fired since, of course.
I imagine that most weddings these days don't have music because they usually take place in the licensing. What do they call it? An off license.
The off license, yes.
What do they call it from the master?
Well, I mean,
you never go in there, you're too busy in the pub.
No, they take place in what is called a registry office, and a gentleman with a very ordinary suit on does it. So there's no music. But if I had music, I should think probably the Hesitation Waltz would be about it.
Very good.
Although we were so poor, I played the violin when we got married.
You did?
Yeah, walked down the aisle and played the mockingbird.
not the Ouslam bird.
What is an Ouslam bird?
Don't
what
tell him.
Well, of course,
don't
if I got married again, the first thing they'd play as I walked down the aisle would be Big Hearted Arthur, your signature tune. But it wouldn't fit everybody. I mean, fancy Paddy Como getting married and walking down the aisle and the band's playing It's Impossible. Or Sinatra on his 84th wedding, you know.
I did it my way.
Well, my wife wanted to be married in her mother's wedding dress, but the old bag was still wearing it.
Leslie Crowther, have you contributed?
I think Arthur's right about the modern songs, of course, except that they changed the inflection so that what now, my love, would become what now, my love? And then you'd have you do something to me would become you do something to me. And what is this thing called love would be what is this thing called love?
Bring back Cyril Fletcher.
Never!
No, but I mean...
And there's the other one, too. Oh, what a beautiful morning would be. Oh, what a beautiful morning.
I tell you what, Mac.
Yes.
There's so many brides these days who go up the aisle to get married and they're pregnant.
What?
That the best tune would be Get Me to the Church on Time.
Abba, we're a couple of swells.
If you no,
now only one of them is swelling.
If you're gonna pursue that, Arthur, they should sing We Three.
You've done so well. I'm sure Mr. Willits has a contribution to make to this. Mr.
Yeah,
Willits.
Shut up now, boys. Give Mr. Willits a chance.
Well, are you concerned in this sort of thing? Well,
yes, the reason for asking is because I'm a church organist. We've had some strange requests. I was once asked by one couple if they minded if we had He Who Would Valiant Be. And I said I didn't mind if he didn't.
I don't know that one.
He who would valiant be against all disaster.
Mr. Willits, have you had any other comical experiences?
Have you had any rats
perhaps?
In your pipes?
No, but we had a curate who was very nervous at officiating at his first wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And at the crucial moment, he'd made so many mistakes that he really went out in glory when he actually said, if any man can show just cause or impediment, why these two may not be joyfully loined together.
Joyfully loined.
Well, in some of these little churches in Liverpool, I used to go there occasionally. I was always there on Sunday afternoons in the Bible class. And I sometimes stayed over for the weddings. And I remember this particular wedding. They weren't very rich, you know, they were very poor. They were really wanted to be married in the backyard so the chickens could eat the rice. But it was in a church.
I knew somebody would get that.
And he came to the point with the minister when he said, and repeat after me, with all my worldly goods I thee endow. And somebody at the back shouted, there goes his bike.
I read that service very carefully before I was married, and I had it changed to with 10% of my worldly goods I thee endow.
You married your agent.
We had a vicar who always managed to get a plea for the church funds in with his, the wedding peroration and the advice to the bride and groom. And he always used to say things like, verily we We need your lolly. The organ bellows have developed a nasty leak, which means an uncomfortable draught whistling round my pulpit every Sunday. The church bell has more cracks in it than a railway teacup. And unless we get a new plug for the font, christenings in future will consist of a quick rub down with a damp cloth.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mr. Willits. Thank you.
Well, that kind of happened anyway.
And now, team, you're going to have a question from Mrs. Elsie Berman. Mrs. Berman, welcome to the programme. Take courage in both hands and put your question to the team.
Comics are always making jokes about seaside landladies. Has any of the team met a landlady he will never forget?
Comics are always making jokes about seaside landladies. Has any member of the team met a landlady he'll never forget?
I met two.
Well, I'm hoping that there are a few landladies who've forgotten me. She said, it'll be 15 shillings a week, and if you like, I can caper for you.
My landlady said it'll be 10 guineas a week, and I don't want any children.
There is a French widow in every bedroom affording delightful prospects.
I once went into Diggs, and she had notices all over the house. It said, breakfast at 8:30, don't slide down the banisters, no nonsense after 11 o'clock. And she had one in the bathroom. It said, it was silly, it was childish. She made it up. It said, don't forget to put in Percy Plug before you turn on Tommy Tap. That was saving hot water, you see. Well, I hadn't written on walls for years, but I thought I must have a go at this, you see. So I wrote underneath, and don't waste your Sammy soap on your Fanny flannel.
Back to landladies.
Right.
Yeah, you've got the experience in touring. You learned these things. You were a bit, you know, wet behind the ears when you started. But you soon found out that when you were in that dining room, you always sat in a window seat so you get larger portions.
Why did you get larger portions in the window seat?
Because the people passing by would think she was a good landlady and very generous.
Is that right?
If I had to explain any more jokes like this...
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ted. If you will make such obscure jokes, you ought to explain them even to the brain of Britain.
Well, I can't help it because I've got a large portion, can I?
I was gave to the landlady.
I was in Diggs once, and the landlady, she was very good, but she gave us fish for every meal. We had fish for breakfast, fish for lunch, fish for supper. Fish. And on the Friday, I was eating my usual piece of fish, and I happened to drop my fork. And the landlady came over, and she said, ah... there's a stranger coming to the house. I said, I hope it's the butcher.
Well done, Arthur.
Leslie.
Oh, rubbish, get off.
Leslie.
Oh, memories.
A few years ago, you said you'd met two landladies and then you stopped abruptly.
Well, I was sort of rather silenced. Yes, actually, two landladies. They're both different places. They're both concerned the loos in the house. The first one, I went upstairs to the loo when I arrived at the place and the toilet wouldn't flush, you know. Well, those terrible ones that go... and then stops. And this terrible landlady's voice came from downstairs. Are you up in the lavatory, Mr. Crowther? I said, yes, I am. I am, yes. She said, well, it's no good doing that. You have to surprise it.
Well, it's a very funny thing you should mention that joke. Because, you know, Leslie, I had the same lavatorial experience.
Did you really?
But this was an outside one, you see.
Yes.
They had nothing inside. It was an outside one down at the bottom of the garden. And I went down there, you know, with as much dignity as I could muster. I was in a bit of a hurry, really. I'd been out with Jim the night before.
You were taking short steps.
Just taking short.
And she said, you did close the door, didn't you, when you'd finished? I said, oh, yes. She said, I wouldn't like our Joe to lose his pigeons.
Mrs. Berman, I think we must turn our attention to you now. You've been very patient listening to these stories. I'm prompted to ask you whether you have anything to do with being a seaside landlady, perhaps.
Well, I do live by the sea, it's true. I've got some friends who are, but I'm not one myself.
But I was told about a comic, it must be Leslie. One night, he took one of the dancing girls back to the Diggs with him, and he ushered her, got her upstairs. He took her up on his back so the landlady... wouldn't hear the two lots of footprints. You see? Anyway, no, this is true, folks. I wouldn't bother you if it wasn't. Oh. And anyway, the idea was she was going to get up in the morning and hop it about 6 o'clock, but they were both so tired or exhausted that they both fell fast asleep and were wakened by the landlady coming in with his breakfast. And she saw the girl next to him and said, "How dare you? I've kept a respectable house here for all these years and you bring a girl here back to these digs. How?" And he sat up in bed. He said, "Madam, do you realise that we're both paid-up members of Equity?" She said, "Oh, I'm sorry," and went down and got another breakfast.
Oh, I love it.
That's a very weird story. I was reminded when you were getting on to those jokes about Lou's at the bottom of the garden, about the fella come back from the war. And he said, "I've travelled all around the world, Father," and he says, "we've got to do away with that Lou at the bottom of the garden. It's unsanitary and it's old-fashioned." And he had a hand grenade with him left over from the war. So he lobbed it into the... and this Lou... And a voice... He said, "You shouldn't have done that." He says, "Your mother's in there."
The minute
she came out and said, "The pills have worked."
Oh, my.
But the other outside loo one that happened to me was they had a terrace of outside loos, you see, and I was caught exactly the same as Ted was. And so I'm creeping down in the middle of the night, and I couldn't remember which one it was, and suddenly this casement window was flung open. This horrendous creature in curlers said... "Where are you going, Mr. Crowther?" I said, "Well, I'm going into this loo." She said, "Well, don't go there. It's next doors and we're not speaking."
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mrs. Berman. Thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to welcome our special guest. And today we have two guests for the price of one, as we welcome one of Britain's top ventriloquists. Moving as ever in aristocratic circles, we proudly present Ray Allen and Lord Charles.
Marvellous.
Welcome, Lord Charles. Will you ask your friend to be seated? Oh, he has.
So much, yes.
Could I just ask...
Where are they? Where are the ladies?
What do you mean, ladies?
Petticoat line, isn't it?
No, this is Does the Team Think?
Ah, oh, no, I'm not here for that, am I?
No, you aren't, if it Does the Team Think.
No, it's Petticoat Line I wanted.
No, I'm afraid you can't have Petticoat Line.
I can't have the Nona.
No.
Can't win, can you?
No, you can't. could I just...
It's damn good, isn't it? Who's this silly arse? Who is he?
My name is MacDonald Hobley. Could I ask you a question,
That's
please?
That's not your name, is it?
Yes, it is.
You poor devil.
could I just ask which of you two is going to put the question?
Yeah, well, I think I'll ask the question because it's...
Thank you, Ray Allen.
I'd rather ask you to don't mind, dear boy. Let me ask the question.
I'll ask the question.
Well, I know these chaps. I'd like to ask them. Yeah, well, I know. I'd like to ask the question, too.
Could you make your mind up, please?
Would you not interfere?
Hobley.
Is it? Yes. Well, never mind. I'm sure your parents meant no harm.
Will you put the question, please?
I'll put the question.
Right.
Yes, all right. Well, hurry up, you silly arse. Go on, then. What, are you reading it?
Yeah, of course I'm reading it.
Oh, go on and read it. What does it say?
The question is, if members of the team inherited a title and a stately home, would it alter their way of life?
Right, I'll repeat that question. If members of the team inherited a title and a stately home, would it alter their way of life?
Well, I'll tell you something.
Arthur Askew, will you get off Leslie Crowther's knee?
Don't get this, somebody. And this fella said...
I say you both.
He said, "Don't you talk to me like that, because I'm a baron." And I said, "It's a pity your mother wasn't."
Arthur Askew now returned to his seat. Leslie Crowther.
I've forgotten what is the question?
No. If members of the team inherited a title and a stately home, would it alter their way of life?
Well, it would certainly make Arthur the shortest night of the year.
I think Lord Charles looks more human than Arthur.
Oh, but he's got a pain in his eye.
Oh. I'm a little confused as to who actually did ask the question because both the lips were moving.
I think it was MacDonald Hobley. Got a fast one there.
Definitely not.
Don't you try to kick me.
No, not.
No, I think that this is not the easy job that one thought it might be some years ago. That's I was right, walking around with a bunch of mugs there. We paid our 50 pence or whatever it was, and this guide was taking us round, you see. And from the wall, there was a stag, an enormous stag's head. And a little fellow at the back said, "Hey, Maggie, he must have been coming at hell of a rate when he went through that wall." And this reminded me, in turn, of the publican who had the bull. He had the bull on the wall, and he said, "That bull," he said, "he killed 6 matadors and my brother." And I said, "I didn't know your brother was a matador." He said, "He wasn't. He was playing darts and he fell on his head."
I think the time has come for us to turn our attention to a real lord. Lord Charles, what are your views about the question? Would it alter your life, or do you happen to have a stately home?
Yes.
What?
What the hell's he got to do with you? What the devil's he on now? I want to talk to these chaps over here.
Well, talk to them, then.
I'm not talking to you.
Oh, beg your pardon.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I think, you see, now, Mr. Edwards there, I think he should have a good title. I think he should have a good address. I mean, something like Lord Delching, the Maltings at the Throthing. Susan, no title for Leslie Crowther. He should remain the common man. And let's face it, there's no one more common than Leslie Crowther. Then, of course, now, oh, Ted Ray there, by Jove, what a lovely chap. Now, you see, unfortunately, Lord Longford has already got the title Lord Pawn, but we could always give Ted the title Lord Corn. He could live at Merry Manor, Giggleswick. Giggleswick! Yes. That was damn funny. And then, there's Arthur there, who of course Arthur has. He should live at the Doll's House, Little Hampton.
Super. Thank you, Lord Charles, for your views.
I'll tell you this, Lord Charles, one more crack like that and you'll go back into your suitcase.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Ray Allen and Lord Charles.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. And here comes Rita Jackson. She's arrived, and this is her question. Rita, your question, please.
Would members of the team ride a tandem? Who would they choose to partner them, and would they prefer front or rear seat?
Would members of the team ride a tandem? Who would they choose to partner them, and would they prefer front or rear seat?
Well, I wouldn't mind as long as they had 2 saddles.
Mrs. Jackson, since you put this question, can I ask whether you have any knowledge at all of tandems yourself?
Yes, we do ride a tandem, my husband and I.
Carry on, Mrs. Jackson.
Tell us which position you adopt. I mean, you know what I mean. Which, who's in front of what? I mean,
and then go on to the tandem.
Keep trying, Mrs. Jackson. You're doing well.
Yes, when we're on the tandem.
When you're on the tandem.
The old man goes in front, Albert.
My husband's at the front. Yes,
he
yes.
does the steering.
The safe way. I once got on a tandem with Jimmy, and it was terrible. I was on the front seat, and his whiskers were tickling me under the armpits.
That's not true, Arthur, but it's,
no, it's
quite
a funny
amusing.
Joke. It's quite humorous.
No, I'm actually much more interested in Mrs. Whatnot than in you, Arthur. Mrs. Rita Jackson, I mean, tell me this now. When you're on the tandem, I mean, who makes the decisions? That's what I want to know.
Well, my husband has to, because he is steering. He also has the brakes, but I can tickle the backs of his legs, you see, because my hands are where his bottom is.
So why do you bother with the backs of the legs?
Now, this is...
I can't get it on the tandem at all.
But, I mean, if he says to you, "I think we ought to take the right fork," and you say we ought to take the left fork, who decides?
Well, I put my left hand out and we go right.
I think I followed you.
I was on the bill once with a cycling act. They used to be in the old days on the music halls. A husband and wife, and they opened the act, both coming on one-wheel thing, unicycles, and then they got onto ordinary cycles, and then they came out for their big finish on a tandem, and they were going round the stage like a bat out of hell, and they went over the footlights into the orchestra. A hell of a crash, this husband and wife, you see. And eventually they brought the fella around, and he just looked to heaven and he said, "Is the bike all right?"
Thank you very much, and thank you, Rita Jackson. Thank you. Welcome to the program, Mr. Ray Ashdown. Mr. Ashdown, I see you brought your question. May we hear it?
Which does the team think is the worst experience? Visiting their dentist, their doctor, or their solicitor?
Which does the team think is the worst experience? Visiting their dentist, their doctor, or their solicitor?
Now, doctor, I don't mind, because he took my pulse the other day. I wish he'd give it back. But he's all right. You see, he gives you a few tablets and away you go. But when the dentist starts, you know, and they strike gold sometimes. Mm. It was McAllister, actually.
What I like about both the dentist and the doctor, the dentist opens your mouth and says, I'll have a look in there. And he suddenly says, yes. And you're supposed to, you don't know what he means. And the doctor puts his hand on your chest and taps his fingers all over and he says, And you think, well, say something, you idiot.
Yeah. But the girl went to the dentist and she was so terrified. She said, oh, I think I'd rather have a baby. He said, make up your mind, I'll adjust the chair.
But I think the doctor has the tough job. I mean, this young fellow, he was a bit worried about his wife, and he called the doctor out in the small hours of the morning, and the doctor went upstairs, went in with the wife, left the husband outside, and the doctor came flying out after a couple of minutes. He said, get me a carving knife. So the young husband ran downstairs, got a carving knife, gave it to the doctor. The doctor went in the room, came out a couple of minutes later. He said, get me a hammer and chisel. So the husband rushed downstairs, got the hammer and chisel, came up again. The doctor went in with the wife, came out again. He said, for God's sake, get me a crowbar. So the young husband said, what is the matter, doctor? What the hell's wrong with my wife? He says, I don't know. I can't get over my bloody bag open.
Mr. Ashdown, which do you consider to be the worst of those three?
Which are you?
Mr. Ashdown.
I'm a solicitor.
I thought you were.
Ignore the team and let's have your views on
That's
it.
That's
Well,
polished.
Certainly the dentist is the worst as far as I'm concerned from the physical pain that he's likely to inflict on one. But I can imagine that most people, or a lot of people indeed, think a solicitor's the worst of all experiences.
Because the pain is deferred.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they always take the hair off first.
I mean, we get the instant pain with the dentist and we get the pain 6 months after with you lot. That long list of to picking up telephone and dialing and all that.
To picking up telephone.
Opticians are the worst because they have those incredible things with the bottom line, which is absolutely tiny. So, you know, X, G, B, Y, Z, all that bit. I know a Polish fella who went to one of these places and said, can you read the bottom line? He said, read it, I know him.
Thank you very much, team. Thank you very much. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Leslie Crowther, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Ray Allen and Lord Charles. And we hope you'll all join us again next week. Till then, this is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.